I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
You're listening to Talking Biotech, the weekly podcast illuminating issues in agriculture and medical biotechnology. Your questions and concerns are answered using a science-based approach with the goal of driving innovation to application with communication. Now here's your host, Dr. Paul Vincelli.
Welcome to the Talking Biotech Podcast, the weekly podcast where we bring science and technology to our listeners with a focus on biotechnology in ways that both help the world and people. My name is Paul Vincelli. I'm sitting in for Dr. Kevin Folta, and we have a guest here from south of the equator, Cecilia Gonzalez, a biotechnology educator from the Bolivian Institute of International Commerce here in Santa Cruz, Bolivia. And so welcome to the program, Cecilia.
Well, glad to join this podcast. I've heard it's quite famous. I haven't had the chance to listen many of them because, well, you're doing such a great job in English. And because I have to catch up a lot of things in Spanish, sometimes I'm left without time. And it's a pleasure to have you here, Paul. It's a pleasure to greet all your listeners as well.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, for listeners, I'm here for a four-day visit with lectures on biotechnology and visits with scientists here in Bolivia. And frankly, they have a wonderful biotechnology education program with you, so I've been very impressed. And thanks to Twitter, we met. So anyway, tell us, it's always a good thing to start with, how did you get into what you do, which is biotechnology education. Tell us something about your story.
Well, I had the opportunity to study in Mexico, where I majored in biotechnology, but towards environmental issues. And while I was finishing my studies, I realized I didn't enjoy that much the environmental side. So somehow I started jumping more into botany, into actually bryophytes. But then when I started digging a little bit more into biodiversity conservation, that's when I met with Wild Crop Relatives. And
Is that an organization, Wild Crop Relatives?
No, it's just actually a program it's run by this organization called Bioversity. Mm-hmm. And they are trying to, put more emphasis and interest in these wild crop relatives that can happen in a lot of these mega biodiverse countries like Bolivia. And when I was getting ready to go into my master's degree, I had clear on my mind that I wanted to do something about conservation of wild crop relatives.
Okay.
And because of that, I had to touch things about like intellectual property, transgenics, and this was like a dark side for me because I have to confess that I was sort of like an activist, but a passive activist. I didn't voice my opinion so loud. But I was on the other side thinking that, yeah, transgenics are bad, transnationals and such, all these myths. And thankfully, I had the chance to go and study at ASU. And that's where my...
ASU being Arizona State University.
That's right. I'm a sun devil. And that's when a lot of my professors, they were very kind to correct me in the exact way. Like, they were never judging me or pointing me my mistake right away. Mm-hmm. So they were doing what any academic will do. They were giving me information. They would give me books, some papers. And so I had to review them. I had to sit down and read and realize that I was completely wrong. And I felt ashamed because since I had a background in genetics and biochemistry, I felt ashamed. I said, like, I'm so dumb. I should have reviewed this information more carefully instead of just having the wrong idea. And gladly, among my advisors, there was this Indian bioeconomist, and she told me, like, even the socioeconomic issues in India with the BT cotton producers. So that was like a whole change in my set. Mm-hmm. And I finished my master's degree over there. I come back to Bolivia, where it's very complicated to find jobs in science field. And that's when a friend starts telling me that they need somebody to work with biosafety. Mm-hmm. And he was aware that I knew more now about GMOs and all these things, patents and all the stuff. And I think he had in his head that I was still on the other side, you know, mm-hmm. opposing all of that. So he challenged me and he said, would you like to have this position? Why don't you send your papers? So I send my papers, I present myself into the environmental ministry, and I think nobody was... Nobody wanted this job, this position, because it's so polemic, it's so controversial that everybody was just rejecting it. Mm-hmm. And I took the challenge. I enrolled the ministry as a biosafety regulator, even though I was not even trained for this. But I had a, you know, just like a basic ground. And during this time, which was not that long, actually, it lasted a little bit less than 3 years, I had the opportunity to get some training in Costa Rica with it's ICA, called in Spanish. It's the Inter-American Cooperation, Agriculture Cooperation Institute. Okay. And that's actually the main place where I started training on becoming a regulator. And I have to thank a lot the persons that actually helped me there, a lot of people that you actually know. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's when my whole view completely changed, because then I got committed myself to say, people is not getting well informed. People is having the wrong ideas. They don't understand, and they are creating all these stories that are actually just creating fear. Yeah. So among my colleagues in the ministry, I had also to start educating them, because all of them actually had the wrong ideas. Mm-hmm. Starting from my boss, and eventually we had to have this long talk where she's still skeptical by today, but she trusts me a lot. Mm-hmm. So she says, like, okay, I think you wouldn't put your hands on fire for this technology if it was not safe. So yeah. I'm not 100% convinced, but yeah. I still trust what you're telling me, that yeah. it's okay.
Yeah, we were, before we started our interview, we you and I were commenting how you were somewhat like the Mark Linus of Bolivia. Yeah. And for those listeners who don't know who Mark Linus is, he's a former activist opposed to GMOs, and also was very active in fighting for action on climate change. And he's famous for this. He took the same approach to genetic engineering. He said, you know, I really have to, if I'm telling people they should look at the science on genetic engineering, I should be willing to do the same on, or the science on climate change, I should be doing willing to do the same on genetic engineering. And he has lost friends as a result. And sounds like you have too.
Yeah, well, I don't get along that good anymore with a lot of biologists. Mm. Who they have now reject me because they say, like, oh, maybe you are paid by all the transnationals, you know, you're a Monsanto girl, something like that. I'm like, yeah. I wish they would give me the check. Like, really, I'm waiting for it.
Yeah.
And we have gone into arguments with some biologists here in Bolivia. And it's astonishing for me because these people have even a PhD, but yet they make the same mistakes that I was making in the past. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me also to understand what's the obstacle for them to open their eyes, mm-hmm. and to understand that it's not just a transnational issue, it's not just a privilege for the big countries, that now it's possible that, for instance, if Bolivia had the setting and the will to do it, we could be developing our own biotechnology. So at some point, it's painful for me to see that my country has so much genetic potential. Like, we have My advisor at ASU, she was envious about Bolivia because when I show her just the endangered wild crop relatives of peanut, she was telling me, and these are just the endangered species. What about the other species? Oh, it's even more. We have more variety. And she questioned me, like, what is Bolivia doing with all this variety? Nothing. We don't even have an industry on peanut here. Even Argentina is ahead of us, and Argentina has much less biodiversity than us in peanut. So that's very frustrating because even our producers, sometimes they are looking for other crops to rotate. And for instance, they suggest, like, we would like to use peanut, but because we don't have well-adapted varieties, we're not using it.
Well, so yeah, we've had several days of discussion on biotechnology and in all ramifications in our course that you've participated in as well. Tell us about, give us an overview of the situation on biotechnology here in Bolivia.
I tend to joke with this because I say it's like a comic and tragedy at the same time. Yeah. I had the opportunity actually to present this situation in a poster in Guadalajara this year with the ISB GMO Congress, International Congress. And everybody was approaching to me mainly from the big transnationals, you know, like Monsanto guys, DuPont guys, and they were very intrigued and asking, what's going on in Bolivia? Because you have a regulation, you have a law on biosafety, you have a something that could start, you know, to guide the whole country, but nothing is going on there. So explain us. People also from Uruguay and Paraguay, which are our neighbors, regulators, they would also come in and say, what's going on? So it seems like Bolivia had a good intention to start. In 1997, we have our regulation for biosafety, which is very similar to what the Cartagena Protocol actually has. And by 2005, we have the first approval for soy, glyphosate-resistant soy. Okay. The event is from Monsanto. And that's the only approval we have ever had.
That one.
Just one soybean, one event, 43-2, that's it.
But it's used in what percentage of soybean here in Bolivia?
Well, it's now we're starting the 11th year of using this event, and it's almost 99%.
Yeah, so it's been very popular with the producers.
It's been very popular, but after 11 years, even producers now see the disadvantage of using just one event. Now they are starting to use again other herbicides as well. So they are starting to feel this change or this bad handling of technology in their pockets.
Okay, so bad in the sense of development of weeds that resist the glyphosate application.
And that's correct. Okay. And it's even worse because we have a lot of small producers who actually benefited from this technology more than the big ones, which is always the case. But now, because they don't have the whole information, they just see from the neighbor, oh, it's working for them, so I'm just going to apply. So it's this big mass of small producers who are not well educated, and sometimes they misuse this technology, even though it's something simple. I don't want to even imagine what's going on with the illegal event we have in Bolivia, which is the BT corn, also known in Spanish as Betito.
Betito.
Like little BT.
Yeah.
And four to 5 years ago, I think somebody brought the BT corn here, just, you know, because that's the type of corn they grow over here. And when I was working at the ministry, it was already reported or an estimated of 30% of this production, illegal BT corn. Nowadays, we are hearing that it's 40% or even 50% of the corn that is grown here in this part of Bolivia that is illegal BT corn. And what I've told you, I'm not afraid if big producers are using it because they know, they have the training, they know how to use this technology, but I'm afraid of the big number of small producers that they don't know how to handle this technology. And apparently they are starting to have these problems, you know, like insect resistant.
Okay.
So that, in the end, it's going to be more harmful for our producers in general.
Okay, so your concern is the use of BT corn by small producers who may not really fully understand the concept of refuges, for example, to reduce the buildup of resistance, is going to lead to the loss of the effectiveness eventually. Yeah, I understand.
And probably what's even something that nobody understands is how come we don't have this approval or this regulation working for this type of crops, but yet we're importing a lot of food. Among other things, mm-hmm. last year, for instance, we had a bad season for corn. We even had the worm that attacks the corn. Most producers lost actually whole of their production. Yeah. But the funny thing, or the angering thing, I really feel upset about this, is that the government accepted to import corn from Argentina.
Which is going to be genetically engineered. It's GMO. Yes.
So instead of benefiting our and helping our producers, we're helping Argentina producers.
Interesting. You know, one of the things that's been striking, as I've learned here in Bolivia and my visit here in Bolivia, about the situation with corn, BT corn and its apparent expansion, even though it's not yet approved, it creates a real struggle because, you know, there are growers that that really want to reduce their insecticide use, and I was told that in this what's called the summer season here in Bolivia, corn can receive two applications of insecticides, and in the winter season, it can receive as commonly six applications. And two is a lot, but six is even more. Am I in the ballpark with those numbers?
Actually, we even heard about some producers. The limit is their pocket. So if they know that they can still put one or two more applications, they're going to do it.
Wow.
Just if they think that they can actually recover some part of that production. So we have heard in places here in Santa Cruz where they have even reached eight applications.
Mm. Wow.
Even 10 at some points.
Yeah. Wow.
It's kind of stupid. Like, if we could use some biotechnology to help this part of Bolivia, mm-hmm. because I want to make it clear that Bolivia has three different regions. Most activists oppose to this technology because they say it's a menace to our biodiversity, mm-hmm. our crop diversity in corn. And reality is that the corn that we produce here in Santa Cruz is mainly for industrial use, mm-hmm. or to feed all the chicken that Bolivians eat.
Animal feed or cornstarch production, corn oil. Mm-hmm.
It's not meant to be for direct use.
Right.
So it's even a hybrid. It's not even a land race that most people think that it's going to endanger. And on top of that, the valleys in Bolivia, which is in the middle of the country, they are protected by the Andean mountain range. So you have a physical barrier over there, and also the temperature barrier.
Okay.
And if we want to protect those land races, we can still do it. Like, we can put a lot of more emphasis on what our producers in the valleys are doing. Mm. And in the end, I always tell people the real menace to our crop diversity is ourselves. Because here in the cities, especially in La Paz, in Cochabamba, in Santa Cruz, the three main big cities in Bolivia, nobody eats native races. Maybe if you go to Cochabamba, which is the valley city, you may eat during a year probably 5 to 6 land races if you're lucky. And if you're this kind of weird person which is always looking at diverse food. But other than that, we're not using them. Mm. We're not encouraging our local producers to grow this corn. We're not opening their markets. So eventually, sometimes they also get tired. Nobody's buying me this corn. Why am I putting more effort? Because sometimes these local land racers or native races, they have more plagues, so they have to do a lot more effort to produce them. So in the end, it's just us, the problem. It's not the problem of GMOs. Mm.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So you've got ways to promote basically what we refer to as coexistence, and that is the coexistence of different farming systems that may initially feel like they're diametrically opposed. So, yeah, that's very interesting, and look forward to learning more about that, either maybe in the program or in other opportunities. So let's take a break, and we're talking to Cecilia Gonzalez from the Bolivian Institute of International Commerce, and she's a biotechnology educator and really a keystone here in Bolivia for much information on this topic. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion.
the day a note about auto wrecks, podcasts, and happy endings. A note to the Talking Biotech podcast comes from Jenny from Bemidji, Minnesota. She says that she was listening to the Talking Biotech podcast while driving late on a snow-covered country road. She hit a patch of black ice and ended up losing control of her vehicle, rolling and landing upside down. She was unable to call for help as she was unable to find her phone. But wherever it was, it continued to play the Talking Biotech podcast. She was trapped there for over an hour, cold but unharmed. Thank goodness for airbags. She wrote, "I closed my eyes and listened to the podcast. Kevin and Paul kept me company until help arrived." She was able to enjoy two complete episodes of the Talking Biotech podcast and said that the soothing messages of science made a desperate time much more pleasurable. Thank you for letting us know, Jenny, and proud to be your podcast Jaws of Life. Share your experiences or interests with us at talkingbiotech@gmail.com. And now, back to the podcast.
And we're back on the Talking Biotech podcast. This is Paul Vincelli, and we're here in Santa Cruz de la Sierra, Bolivia, with Cecilia Gonzalez, a biotechnology educator for the Bolivian Institute of International Commerce. And welcome back, Cecilia.
Glad to be back here, and I hope you're enjoying your stay here in Santa Cruz.
I have. In fact, I've enjoyed the food, and there's a particular restaurant I hope we get a chance to visit once more for the delicious grilled vegetables and meat that was served with it. But back to the subject at hand. So I certainly appreciate your sharing your thoughts on BT corn, which does not have yet approval here in Bolivia, but there are instances where it's being used. And you have some very interesting insights. So tell us more about BT corn in Bolivia.
Well, because last year producers had about a production, the government allowed to import certain amount of corn from Argentina, and of course it was BT corn, mainly for feed. And a little bit for industry. And that importation has finished, like no more.
Okay, so no more would be allowed under
legally,
the law.
Legally, it's not allowed anymore.
Okay.
Yet the big association of producers here in Santa Cruz have detected that a lot of this illegal corn is still coming.
Mm-hmm. Still being shipped in from Argentina.
Most likely from Argentina, and they have detected that it's not coming, you know, in little bags. It's coming in containers or even trucks. Mm-hmm. So they are very afraid because the last corn season production, it was really good for our producers, and now they have this very disadvantaged way to compete with the illegal corn that is coming from Argentina, and that's really bad for our own producers because. Finally, they had a good season of corn. They have now the product, but they cannot compete with the cheapest price that is coming from Argentina illegally. So they were asking me what's the fastest way to detect if it's a GMO corn. Mm-hmm. And now I'm assessing them on how to use the stripes. And most likely they're going to start doing this work with customs. So they can catch people and probably have an estimate of how much is really coming from Argentina illegally, not approved by the government.
Okay.
And how much is this actually hurting our own producers.
So they're starting with those dipsticks that are maybe available by several companies, but I think one of those is Agdea. I'm not absolutely sure, but
yes.
we do a lot of work with Agdea. That's why their name comes to mind. But anyway, yeah, so they're using these dipsticks for a diagnostic test for the BT traits. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But this actually comes all together with a core problem that I have detected, and it's the the lack of a serious biosafety policy in the country.
Okay.
We may have this regulation from 1997, but it's old, it's outdated, mm-hmm. and on 2010, Bolivia changed its even its constitution, which constitution actually doesn't forbid the use of GMOs, but it says in one of the articles, Article 409, I actually can remember now, it says that all these GMOs should be regulated by law. Mm-hmm. And from 2005, when we had the only approval in Bolivia, probably there was some activity by the Biosafety National Committee until 2011. And by some activity, I mean that they were just doing, trying to build their own regulation and their own rules and probably build some protocols. But then on 2011, because of activists who were accusing this committee that they were very close to approve BT corn, their work was dissolved. From 2011 up to today, there's no activity in biosafety. Mm. While I had the chance to work in the government, I had some experiences. Like, for instance, my boss wanted me to do to monitor in the fields, which was a kind of a frustrating activity because fields here in Santa Cruz are actually quite big.
Yeah.
But we don't have enough personnel. I didn't have, for instance, a car on my own, so a truck on my own, so I can go to the fields. Whenever they put me to work together with another technician from the guys that are in charge of doing the plant inspection to hold all the plagues that come.
You mean like a customs officer or the border patrol kind of thing?
Kind of, but it's just for food and crops. It's the service. I cannot translate it.
Oh, right. AFIS?
It would be like an AFIS, but for Bolivia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I had to work close with them, but they have their own agenda as well. So by 3 in the afternoon, the technician would tell me, well, that's it, engineer. Let's go back. And I'm like, I'm not even half done. So it was also very impossible mm-hmm. to do the monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my reflections, personal reflections, are that this country lacks this biosafety structure. Because it cannot be that one person alone is in charge of monitoring, doing registers, and everything. It's not possible. It's not even, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, so, I'm thinking back to your comment about the competitiveness issue and the disadvantage, basically, competitive disadvantage that Bolivian producers are experiencing. Corn producers, and I've talked to several people from your organization, some of the leaders who've been, and in fact, a departmental government representative who've been very concerned about this differential in competitiveness of the corn in Bolivia versus the corn in Argentina, Paraguay, or Argentina, presumably Brazil too, because they just want a sort of a level playing field. And right now, the local Bolivian producers are not able to compete. So, yeah, and so you've been talking about the lack of a biosafety law, and in fact, there also seems to be, some I haven't run into it, but some pretty strident opposition here in the country to any form of genetic engineering in crops. Have I perceived correctly?
Well, actually, I would consider that you are quite lucky, and I'm actually very relieved that you didn't have to face any of our activists because they can, as in many places, they can get very mean and they can start doing stupid things. For instance, the local government here has a research institution, and last year they inaugurated their biotechnology lab, and these activists start graffitiing all the government local government walls with stupid phrases, like "you are sold to multinationals," mm-hmm. "transgenics are gonna kill us." Mm-hmm. This biotechnology lab is not doing any transgenic. It's actually helping a lot of the producers who have a lot of plagues, and they're trying to guide them on how to handle these plagues and, just not to overuse some fungicides or anything like that. So it's kind of upsetting. So I was a little bit, I have to confess, I was a little bit afraid that we might go to the class and you would see, you know, people dressed up as corns and things like that and throwing us garbage and things like that. So I was quite relieved. But I think that they are awakened since my institution started doing these information campaigns. They are awake now. And we actually have, and we know this for sure, it's being confirmed by our our contacts. One of their leaders is from Chile. And we think it's with international money that he's been deployed to Bolivia to guide this resistance movement from activists. And actually, for instance, next week they're going to have like a convention or something like that. It's going to be hosted by the Spanish International Cooperation Agency here in Santa Cruz. They're going to have, you know, some talks. Supposedly they try to do it as well academic level. But in the end, it's the same old lies from 20 years. I gave up somehow confronting activists because I'm actually tired. my brains are burned by trying to, not even to argue with them, but just to present them information. Last year I had the opportunity to have a debate on radio with, he's not per se an activist, he's more like a well-reserved person, he's actually very educated, but his business is organics, and he sells a lot of also biological predators, which only big farmers can pay. All our small farmers, for instance, they cannot pay that solution. So for them, it's more affordable to use any of these technologies like BT or herbicide resistant, or even the new ones that are drought resistant and such. And during this debate, he was bringing me, you know, the same old lies. And I was just doing a home run with each one because I was telling, you're wrong again. Here are the evidence. This is what's happening now. And by the end of the program, I actually gave him a CD that I compiled with, it's over 300 publications in general about GMOs. Their safety, the you know, scientific academics positions and such. So I gave him the CD and I made it public, you know, like, here I'm giving you a lot of information which is going to actually open your eyes and can open your eyes. Do I have a commitment from you that you're going to review this information? Oh, sure, I'm going to review it. Well, over a year has passed and he hasn't reviewed anything because he has gone into debates with other agronomists and he still repeats the same mistakes. So that means that these people is never willing to learn. They are never willing to actually find out if it's true or not. They hold very close to their ideas. And for instance, now the fight here in Bolivia is that we're not going to allow BT corn because it's going to damage our own land races. And I'm dying to ask these activists, how many native corns you eat a year?
Well, I think your point about the geographic separation that already exists is powerful. The I think you mentioned something about temperature as well. Did you?
Temperature, humidity. I mean, conditions in Santa Cruz are way different than in the valleys. So you don't only have the physical barrier, but you have also the temperature, humidity, even the species that are make company to crops, for instance, over there in Cochabamba are quite different. So what are you afraid of?
Well, since you and I both, I think, are free of conflicts of interest in this topic, and we're not doing this for any special gift from any transnational or any other commercial organization. So maybe it's a good idea after hearing about your, you know, some of the challenging experiences you've had, maybe it's a good idea to visit the question, what is ultimately behind your motivation? Why do you do this? Why do you challenge yourself to work on something that really can generate a lot of controversy in the region?
What I like to joke, I always say, well, I'm waiting the day Monsanto rings my phone and says, like, you're hired. I'm like, yeah, that's going to be the day.
But and of course, you're joking. Just for those who can't see body language on this podcast,
I'm actually just that's a good joke whenever I'm with people that I feel comfortable.
Yeah, and it relieves pressure. I understand.
But in the end, it's actually this frustration of having been born in a country that has all the potential to feed all our people, and not just feed all our people with three things. Like, we could have a colorful and tasteful feast every single day, and yet we are limited to import food. I feel quite upset whenever I read some information of statistics information, and I find out that, for instance, here in Bolivia, we have a traditional thing that is called api. It's a hot corn beverage, but the corn is purple. And I wouldn't say it's like a national beverage or something like that. You know, it's something more related with cold temperature places like La Paz or Potosí or even Cochabamba.
The high elevation places.
Higher elevation places. Like, it's very complicated. If we go out now, and I want to invite you that, we're not going to find that easily here in Santa Cruz. Mm. Anyway, it's something very traditional for some places in Bolivia. And we should be producing enough purple corn to match this demand.
Mm-hmm.
What I've learned last year when I was reviewing the statistics, we are importing half of the demand from Peru. Mm. And I'm frustrated. I'm thinking, like, this is not a big amount of purple corn we need in the country. How come we are not giving the producing enough?
Mm-hmm.
It's shameful. And then we have these also superfoods, or what people now is calling them, the superfoods, starting from quinoa, going with cañawa, kiwicha, tarwi. All of these are incredible things that could be feeding our people, and we're not using them. Quinoa, for instance, is grown here in Bolivia, just in a certain region in the in between salt flats, in between Uyuni and the other salt flat. Right now, the name escaped. And it's grown into a monoculture, first of all, and I don't see any activists protesting this. And second of all, it's the main market is to export it to Germany, Europe in general, mm-hmm. but Germany is one of the big markets.
And what is the crop? I'm sorry.
Quinoa.
Okay.
And of course, whenever you're exporting quinoa to Europe, they want it to be organic, whatever organic means.
Mm-hmm.
But for instance, I was talking with some of the producers here in Santa Cruz, and I told them, have you ever exchanged some point of views with the quinoa producers? And they told us, yes, we have visited them, and we actually offered them that we could transform one machine so they can mechanically harvest quinoa.
Hmm.
You know what? They rejected. I said, that's stupid, because harvesting quinoa is also breaking your bones. You know, you're bending all the time and such. And I said, why? And the people from Santa Cruz, they told me, it's the most silly answer, because they told us, our people in Germany who is financing the market so that we can sell in Germany, they told us that if we use a machine to harvest, it's not going to be organic anymore.
Mm.
And because of this, they are not going to buy it.
Mm.
What's the result of this obsession to sell just organic quinoa? That, for instance, my people here in Bolivia were not allowed to eat freely quinoa. Why? Because the price is very high. It's incredible food. You have a lot of proteins inside quinoa, amino acids. Like, you actually can replace it instead of eating meat, you can eat a good portion of quinoa.
Mm.
But it's expensive.
Yeah.
So people here in Bolivia, my people, is feeding from rice, from noodles, from chatarra, what we call junky food, but we're not feeding from quinoa. And the other one that I told you, tarwi, it also has like incredible nutritious properties. I told one of the breeders, like, why cannot we grow more, you know, bigger scale tarwi? It has a lot of plagues. Do we have any solution around? And she's, yes, we have some native crops that are not the ones that we are eating. They have some resistance to some of those plagues. How could you put those into the crop? She's frustrated, and she tells me, sure, I would like to use, you know, transgenesis or something like that. Why am I not doing it? Because regulation is not giving me that chance.
Yeah. So your interest is in there are several aspects to your sort of commitment to the Bolivian producers. And one is helping Bolivian grain producers remain competitive against competition from these large countries in South America that like Argentina, and another is helping farmers in Bolivia and the region certainly diversify by helping them produce large quantities of crops that may need some genetic modification in some way to, you know, avoid insect problems or disease problems. So you really have diverse reasons for your interest in biotechnology, it sounds like.
But in the end, I would say my main goal is that anybody here in Bolivia, for instance, could have quinoa in their dish probably 3 times a week without that being a problem for their pockets.
Right. Okay, so affordable amounts of, quinoa, right,
and,
sure.
And not only quinoa.
And not only quinoa.
I would like us in Bolivia, all Bolivians, us to eat quinoa, tarwi, isaño,
own crops.
Our own crops. Yeah. And not just look at them and say, oh, yes, these are traditional crops. Let's
send them to Europe.
Let's send them to Europe, or let's just keep producing them as we used to do it romantically 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so really ultimately your interest is in the Bolivian producers, Bolivian consumers.
Well, it resumes to improve the quality of life of us here in Bolivia.
Yeah.
I have a lot of... I'm not a biological mother, but I have a lot of good sons and good daughters. And I feel frustrated because sometimes when I bring them home and I invite them all these products that are locally grown and are these native crops that are not well known outside, but I like them. I enjoy the flavor and I like how I can mix it with other things. And they try it sometimes for the first time. Like one of my goddaughters, she had quinoa for the first time at home with me. And I was thinking, this is stupid. Like, we are the supposed diversity origin of quinoa. Why one of my citizens here in Bolivia has never tried it? And even farther, she thought, like, oh, I thought that was just, you know, for pigs or cattle or things like that. And the second thing she told me, like, I've heard it's kind of bitter. And I said, well, yeah, that's the saponin. I had to explain to her why is it bitter and blah, blah, blah. But then I explained it, this processed quinoa, you don't have to fight with saponin. You can just boil it, mix it with your vegetables, and eat it. So when she tried it, I said, this is tasty. Okay, do you want to know one more way to eat it? So I made like tortillas with some cheese with it. She was, you know, licking her fingers. And then she told me like, oh, where can I get it? Like, yeah, supermarket. Some people sometimes in the farmer's market has it. But I don't think you're going to be able to pay it. And when she found out the price, she was very disappointed. She said, like, I would like to eat this more often.
Yeah.
So that's actually, I think, my ultimate goal, that we can all feed better here in Bolivia, have better nutrition.
Yeah. And enjoy our own cultural heritage.
I see it, sadly, when I came back from the United States, I was very surprised. I was astonished that most young people here is eating a lot of junk food, like... 3-4 times during the week, they're eating hamburgers, pizza. We have a very stupid thing that is called salchipapa. It's a chopped sausage mixed with the French fries. And kids love that. So I'm frustrated. I'm thinking, like, we have so much delicious food, but people is giving a preference for all this junky food.
Yeah.
Product of, what's the result of all this? We are starting to increase the number of diabetics. Starting to increase the number of obese kids. Now, I'm not talking about adults. I'm talking about kids. And, you know, all those problems bring more problems. In the end, that's my ultimate goal.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. That was a wonderful and unexpected twist to this interview. We kind of launched in with just a very general idea of what we were going to talk about, but it's been very interesting for me. And, we've had a great experience together here with this course, and boy, I have appreciated your presence because there have been many opportunities for you to interject some important information that you bring, and added, of course, the part about the regulatory aspects today. And just you've just been a great hostess and co-instructor. So, thanks once again for inviting me here to Bolivia.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Paul, because it's really been a great experience. I never in my dreams ever thought I was going to share a stage with this kind of researchers. And I actually have to thank not only you, but all these researchers that are involved into bringing the information out to society, because I actually learn from each one of them. Like, everybody is always teaching me something, even though they don't know. But somehow I'm learning from them. I'm learning from their techniques. I'm learning from how they do it. And I'm trying to build as well my own style on this. And for me, I feel privileged to have these opportunities. I've had last year the opportunity to meet Francisco Aragao from Embrapa, mm-hmm. Dr. Wayne Parrott.
Yeah, from Georgia.
Yeah, so I feel I'm in the middle of the elite people of biotechnology. So yeah. It's a great pleasure for me to collaborate.
Well, wonderful. You're one of the elite. So and I learned that this week. So thanks once again for joining us, and it's good to have you.
Well, thank you all, and I would like to take the advantage now to invite anybody to come to Bolivia anytime. We have a lot of young kids who are also eager to do some research, and hopefully at some point any of you can help to train them and to form better scientists for Bolivia.
Sounds good. Thank you. And thank you, listeners, for joining us as we spoke with Cecilia Gonzalez, a biotechnology educator for the Bolivian Institute of International Commerce here in Santa Cruz de la Sierra, Bolivia. And we look forward to you joining us in future podcasts. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. Please send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review on iTunes and recommend this podcast to a friend. More downloads and reviews raise the visibility of this podcast and help us reach a wider audience with science.